sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
The show you're about to hear was originally aired in June of 2010, but it's still appropriate today as the speaker, Peter Dale Scott, talks about continuity of government, which we are still under. And now let's begin with the show.
On May 14th through 16th, I was at the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, California, that I helped to organize along with Kevin Zenzi, Jason King, and Gabriel Day. Peter Dale Scott was one of the speakers at the event. Today you're going to hear the second and final part of that speech. And then for the last half of the show, I'm going to focus on the group We Are Change, and specifically the We Are Change LA group, with an update on the terrorist charges against their lead organizer, Bruno Brewiler. But first, let me tell you a bit about Peter Dale Scott. Peter Dale Scott is a former Canadian diplomat and English professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He's a poet, writer, and researcher. His books include The War Conspiracy, The Assassination, Dallas and Beyond, Crime and Cover-Up, The CIA, The Mafia, and the Dallas Watergate Connection, The Iran-Contra Connection, Cocaine Politics, Drugs, Armies, and the CIA in Central America, Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, Deep Politics 2, Drugs, Oil, and War, The Road to 9/11, The War Conspiracy, JFK, 9/11, and the Deep Politics of War. And his next book, expected to come out in 2010, will be The Road to Afghanistan, The War Machine, The CIA, and The Global Drug Connection. He was an anti-war speaker during the Vietnam and Gulf Wars and was co-founder of the Peace and Conflict Studies Program at UC Berkeley and of the Coalition on Political Assassinations, known as COPA. His poetry has dealt with both his experience and his research, the latter of which has centered on U.S. covert operations, their impact on democracy at home and abroad, and their relations to the John F. Kennedy assassination and the global drug traffic. So it was Peter Dale Scott's writings that brought forth the term deep state or deep politics. I highly recommend his book, The Road to 9/11. And here are a few paragraphs written by Peter Dale Scott in the introduction to his book, The Road to 9/11. Quote, but this book also focuses on something else. The top 1%'s direct or indirect control of certain specific domains of government, beginning in the 1940s with the creation of the CIA. It is a story that looks beyond the well-defined public entities of open politics to include the more amorphous and fluid realm of private control behind them. This realm of wealthy private influence, the overworld, is a milieu of those who either by wealth or background have power great enough to have an observable influence on their society and its politics. Those parts of the government responding to their influence I call the deep state, if covert, or security state, if military. Both represent top-down or closed power as opposed to the open power of the public state that represents the people as a whole. I argue in this book that the power of the American public state needs to be revived and its out-of-control deep state radically curtailed. The proper balance between the public state and the deep state has been lost, and the deep state's secret top-down powers have become a major threat to democracy. Unquote. So now here's Peter Dale Scott speaking at the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, California, this past May.
In the Clinton era, the vanished Soviets were now replaced by terrorists. Exactly. There were other changes, too. In the earlier times, the specialists selected to run the shadow government had been drawn from across the political spectrum, Democrats and Republicans alike. But now, down in the bunkers, Rumsfeld found himself in politically congenial company, the players' roster being filled almost exclusively with Republican hawks. Quote, it was one way for these people to stay in touch. They'd meet, do the exercise, but also sit around and castigate the Clinton administration in the most extreme way, close quote, a former Pentagon official with direct knowledge of the phenomenon told me, that is to say Coburn. Quote, again, the official, you could say this was a secret government in waiting. The Clinton administration was extraordinarily inattentive. They, the Clinton government, had no idea what was going on, close quote. Now, Coburn's account requires some qualification. Richard Clark, a Clinton Democrat, makes it clear that he participated in the COG games in the 1990s, and indeed he himself drafted Clinton's Presidential Decision Directive 67 on enduring constitutional government and continuity of government. But COG planning involved different teams for different purposes. I suspect that the Pentagon official was describing the Department of Defense team dealing with retaliation to a terrorist attack. The Pentagon official's description of a, quote, secret government in waiting, close quote, which included both Cheney and Rumsfeld, who were indeed waiting, is very close to the standard definition of a cabal, as a group of persons secretly united to bring about a change of government. In the same era, Cheney and Rumsfeld projected change also by their public lobbying through the Project for the New American Century, for a more militant Middle East policy. In light of how COG was actually implemented in 2001, one can legitimately suspect that however interested this group had been in continuity of government under Reagan, under Clinton, the focus of Cheney's and Rumsfeld's COG planning, the focus was now a change of government. Understandably, there is great psychological resistance to the extraordinary claim that Cheney and Rumsfeld, even when not in government, were able to help plan successfully for constitutional modifications which they themselves then implemented when back in power. Most people cannot bring themselves even to believe the second known half of this claim, that on September the 11th, 2001, two COG plans overriding the Constitution were indeed implemented. That is why the first two print reviews of my book, The Road to 9/11, were both favorable, both intelligently written, both reported that I had speculated that COG had been imposed on 9/11. No, it was not a speculation. The 9/11 Commission report twice confirms that COG was instituted on the basis of a phone call between Bush and Cheney, of which the commission could find no record. No record, I did speculate in my book, because it took place on a secure COG telephone outside the presidential bunker with such a high classification that the 9/11 commission was never supplied the phone records. A footnote in the 9/11 report says, the 9/11 crisis tested the government's plans and capabilities to ensure the continuity of constitutional government and the continuity of government operations. We did not investigate this topic, except as needed to understand the activities and communications of key officials on 9/11, which in this respect they did not understand and admitted they did not. The chair, vice chair, and senior staff, that's Lee Hamilton again, were briefed on the general nature and implementation of these continuity plans. The other footnotes confirm that no information from COG files was used to document the 9/11 report. At a minimum, these files might resolve the mystery of the missing phone call which authorized COG. I suspect that they might tell us a great deal more, such as the exercises that took place on that day. What is the first step out of this current state of affairs in which the Constitution has in effect been superseded by a higher, if less legitimate, authority? I submit that it is to get Congress to do what the law requires and determine whether our present proclamation of emergency shall be terminated as required under 50 U.S.C. 1622, paragraph 2002. That's the part of the U.S. Code which requires this. An earlier, polite, judiciously worded appeal to this effect failed. It may be necessary to raise the issue in a larger, albeit more controversial context, the scandal that a small cabal was able to supersede the Constitution and Congress has failed despite repeated requests to do anything about it. And that's what I hope left and right in this room can agree on, that something should be done to restore our Constitution to the effect that it was in before 2001. I don't know what the situation is. I know that a congressman tried to find out what the situation is and was told that he didn't have the authority to do so, even though he and the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee were requesting this in writing. Okay. They don't know, I don't know, but we know there are COG annexes being added to the latest we know of, were added in 2007. Yes, they are still in force. I was very interested in Ellen Brown's talk this morning because I feel that she was absolutely right to draw an analogy between the unknown forces which engineered the fall of Lehman Brothers and the unknown forces which engineered 9/11. And I wanted to ask her, because at one point she said that all these bankers were doing what seemed best to them, but at another point she really seemed to be implying that the system had been gamed by some sinister force in order to bring about a profound economic change. And that is what I see myself, though I can't prove it, as there was a similar political gaming on the 9/11 2001 side to bring around this change in COG. The most important part, which I haven't developed in this talk, but I write about it in The Road to 9/11, was this project endgame of the Department of Homeland Security to provide a whole new system of detention camps. And the justification for it is almost exactly the justification for the camps that North was working on back in the 1980s. In other words, to deal with the problem of illegal immigrants. But, of course, the detention camps are fungible. They can be used for us as well as for illegal immigrants. And the other thing is NORTHCOM. That was done with almost no debate at all. And by the way, it was also done in my country, Canada. Britain went through a very similar convulsion almost immediately after 9/11. And then Canada has militarized itself. An American army can now march into Canada, or more likely fly into Canada, without any authorization from the civilian government of Canada because of this NORTHCOM, NORAD, planning, which is escaping from civilian review. So all of this concerns me very much, but I can't answer your question. We just know there's something out there, it's big, and nobody's talking about it. And the great disappointment was when we got a Democratic president, he's not committed to the Bush agenda, he did not vote for going into Iraq, but he's extending the cloak of secrecy about this. That's very disturbing, I think.
You've just been listening to the second and final part of a speech by Peter Dale Scott given on May 16, 2010. To see the video of this speech, you can go to the website understandingdeeppolitics.org. And now I want to talk to you about the group We Are Change and the recent arrest of Bruno Brewiler, the lead organizer with the We Are Change LA chapter. I'm going to start by reading you an article that was posted on the We Are Change website on June 15th about Bruno's arrest. And here goes. We Are Change LA's lead organizer, Bruno Brewiler, is being targeted as a terrorist threat. It all began when Bruno was sitting in the audience at a civil hearing for another We Are Change LA member. The judge literally did not like Bruno's involuntary facial expression and ordered him out of the courtroom. He was detained in the hall after asking to see the officers' ID cards before he left the building. They are required, according to their own manual, to provide ID upon request, but apparently don't like to be asked for it. When the supervising officer ordered Bruno to turn around and put his hands behind his back, Bruno instantly turned around and put his hands behind his back with absolutely no resistance. At first, he was supposedly being detained for trespassing. But of course, you can't trespass on public property. So they dropped trespassing and told him he was being detained for a public disturbance. About an hour later, when the supervisor actually placed Bruno under arrest, the original charge was changed to misdemeanor contempt of court. None of the witnesses present heard the judge mention anything about contempt when asking him to leave. Two felony resisting arrest charges were then tacked on, which means Bruno is charged with physically resisting the officers twice, though witnesses observed that Bruno did not ever resist the officers. The arresting supervising officer claimed that Bruno threatened to assassinate him. Then the same officer ordered an underling to back up his claim as a false witness and charged Bruno with making a terrorist threat. After 9/11, legislation was passed making it very easy to charge ordinary citizens as terrorists for almost any reason. They're calling him a potential cop killer. We are talking about Bruno, a man who raised money for 9/11 first responders and the Feel Good Foundation. He's also a member of the Southern California Oath Keepers and the initiator of Talk to a Cop Wednesdays, an outreach effort to befriend and educate law enforcement throughout Los Angeles. We are talking about a man committed to nonviolent change, peace, and social justice. This is about all of us. This is about freedom. The struggle for Bruno's freedom is a microcosm of what is happening all across the United States. We cannot allow We Are Change leaders to be labeled and targeted as terrorists. And now here's an update on Bruno's situation posted on 9/11 Blogger on June 21st, 2010. And it goes this way. Bruno's fight for freedom continues as support from around the world rises, including support from freedom fighters like Alex Jones, plus interviews by Jack Blood, The Corbett Report, and others around the world are calling for much-needed financial support for Bruno's defense fund. We Are Change Holland created FreeBruno.org to help raise funds and create awareness of what's happening to Bruno throughout Europe. Bruno says that he is deeply touched and frankly surprised at how supportive the 9/11 truth community is being. He never expected so many people to have his back. To clarify the terrorist threat charge that Bruno is facing, the California Penal Code is 422 and is a charge of terrorist threat. Terrorist threats have always been considered serious crimes in the United States, but law enforcement agencies have become especially strict since the World Trade Center attacks on 9/11. A terrorist threat is the threat to commit an act of violence intended to threaten or intimidate another individual with reckless disregard of the risks. The consequences of a terrorist threat conviction can range in severity depending on such factors as prior criminal convictions, status of parole or probation, amount of media attention on the case, and other circumstances. Punishments and penalties of a terrorist threat conviction may include prison time, loss of constitutional rights, parole or probation, rehabilitation, hefty fines, and more. Since 9/11, charges of terrorism, including the California Code 422, need less burden of proof in order to prosecute than other felonies. Often, U.S. citizens accused of minor crimes find themselves facing terrorism charges as a direct result of 9/11. And here's a quote from Bruno. Apparently, because of the terrorist threat and felony resisting arrest charges, as well as being referred to as crazy and in need of psych meds, I was treated as a special inmate and kept in shackles and solitary isolation. They kept me in room number 6 for hours on end, where the frigid air was blasted. Anybody who has been in jail knows that it's cold. I have been there on more than one occasion, but it was like nothing I have ever experienced. Eventually, I lost all my body heat. When they took the shackles off, I pulled my arms through my sleeves and pulled my shirt over the bridge of my nose. One officer continuously opened the window in the door and called me a crazy guy. I got so cold that my legs, arms, shoulders began convulsing uncontrollably. Not shivering, convulsing. I had never experienced that in my life. I passed out. A couple of times, the same officer opened the door and yelled at me, bringing me back to consciousness, only to leave me convulsing and to pass out again. Finally, he opened the door and yelled at me, and another officer shackled me again, led me into a cage in the courtroom, and I stood there shivering. You can learn more about Bruno's arrest by going to the websites wearechange.org or WACLA.org. You can also donate to Bruno's legal fund at those websites. The group We Are Change has over 200 chapters around the globe. It was recently targeted by the Southern Poverty Law Center as being a militia or paramilitary group, which is a totally false accusation and leads one to wonder about the hidden agenda of the Southern Poverty Law Center. But more on that in a future show. I'm going to read to you We Are Change's description of themselves from their website. As you listen to it, see if you can find any evidence of them being a group that promotes violence. And also ask yourself why the government and the powers that be might feel threatened by this group. We Are Change is a citizens-based grassroots peace and social justice movement working to reveal the truth behind the events of September 11th, as well as the lies of the government and corporate elite who remain suspect in this crime. In addition, we are here to aid the sick and dying first responders through fundraising and social outreach programs in order to promote awareness of those who suffer from physical, emotional, and psychological traumas they received in the aftermath of 9/11. We also seek to meet other local citizens who are interested in educating the public while engaging in peaceful demonstration about the pertinent issues that are affecting our lives each and every day. Furthermore, We Are Change is a nonpartisan, independent media organization comprised of patriot journalists working to hold those engaging in activities that do not represent the wishes of we the people by asking the hard questions that the controlled mainstream media refuses to do. We Are Change has arisen from the remnants of our republic to fill the vacancy left by those who swore to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We seek to expose the fraud of the left-right paradigm and reveal that the world truly functions in a top-down hierarchy that threatens to destroy free society as we know it. We Are Change works to educate, motivate, and activate those striving to uncover the truth behind the private banking cartel of the military-industrial complex that is directing the majority of U.S. policy and that is actively seeking to eliminate national sovereignty and replace it with a one-world order. We will also continue to move in a direction that reconnects we the people to our nation's founding principles laid out in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We Are Change also seeks an uncompromising and independent investigation into the crimes of 9/11 with subpoena power granted to obtain a long overdue resolution for the survivors and families of the deceased. We reject the official explanation of the events leading up to, during, and after the attacks of September 11, 2001, as well as the fear-based policies and state-mandated propaganda being disseminated by the corporate media, which has facilitated the cover-up of 9/11. As we establish citizens groups throughout the country and world, we wish to inspire a community of truth seekers and peacemakers through creative campaigns with a commitment of nonviolence. We Are Change is not so much a group, but an idea that we, the people, are the vehicles of these ideas and of the freedoms, liberties, and truths we are seeking all across the globe. An idea that captures the spirits of our forefathers who just desired freedom. That together, as residents of this planet, we grow like a snowball of truth and justice, rolling down a mountain of tyranny, growing bigger and stronger, recognizing the beauty in our differences and the differences of each other, but at the same time strengthening our cause because we learn and grow from each other's individuality. Then, as we learn to come together, that as one, you, me, him, her, us, we realize that we are change. So there you have it. We Are Change's mission statement. It's a very admirable, patriotic, and courageous one to me. We Are Change confronts the powerful and well-connected when they speak publicly or do book signings, and they ask the hard questions that the corporate media won't. And of course, they do it with a camera and share it on the internet. Here's an example of one of those encounters. This is We Are Change LA confronting 9/11 Commissioner Richard Benveniste at a book signing. The We Are Change folks greet them in the parking lot, he's with his wife, follow them into the bookstore, and also follow them out later. And here's the clip.
Mr. Benveniste, thanks for coming to chat with us. In light of the fact that you can fool all the people some of the time, or some of the people all the time.
Did you make that up?
No, I've heard that somewhere.
Why don't you include Building 7 in the 9/11 Commission report?
It's in there.
Are you worried about the culpability for the cover-up?
How are you going to defend yourself against treason?
The truth is coming out, sir. Do you have anything to say?
All the evidence.
Do you have anything to say,
American people?
do you represent the American people?
Yes, we do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The American people are waking up.
200 million people don't believe the official story of 9/11. Sir, so much evidence was left out, it was a clear cover-up.
I don't understand why you even need me to make your speeches.
You've committed treason.
Well, sir, give us a statement.
By
give
not
us
including
statement.
Building 7 and 9/11
commission? Telling me that I committed treason?
Absolutely.
Yes, we are.
Hey, all touch me. Go ahead.
And you will be held accountable, sir.
Because
you will
did.
Be held accountable.
You're a traitor.
You're a traitor to this country, sir.
Why didn't you include Building 7 in the 9/11 commission report?
Sir, the millions of people that are dying in the wars that 9/11 was a pretext for, everything that's followed 9/11 has been made possible by your cover-up. So any statement you'd like to make to that? Or are you just going to scamper away like a cockroach when the lights come on?
People all over the world are waking up. You're part of the cover-up.
You will be held accountable.
What do you think about this new nanothermite peer-reviewed study that says that nanothermite was found in the dust in the building?
Yeah, I've heard that from your colleagues over here, and I think the objective evidence is that the buildings were destroyed by the terrorists, not by the United States government. But thank you for coming.
Well, who put the nanothermite in the...
Is there anybody who would like the book signed?
I would, sir.
Who put the nanothermite in the dust then? His question didn't ask about the U.S. government.
Excuse me, I didn't need to turn that off.
He's
here to sign box.
Okay.
I was wondering why they never talked about Building 7 in the commission report.
Didn't discuss any of the things that had to do with structural engineering in the report. But if for objective people who would like to find out, there's a lot of information that's available.
Okay, thank you.
Sir, respectfully, along those lines, there were 118 first responders whose testimony was not included. Could you speak to that briefly?
118?
He's not here to answer questions right now. He's just signing.
Well, we didn't get to hear him speak.
Yeah, he was. We were told that he was going to come speak.
I was really looking forward to hearing you speak, sir.
I'm really sorry
you were
for the change of plans.
You really looking forward to hearing yourself speak, because I've been through several of these already.
Well, so we would like for you to deal with your role in what is essentially a treasonous cover-up under Article 3, Section 3 of our Constitution, sir. And we would like to hear you speak about your role in that.
Constitutional scholars can talk to each other, which is what you do on the internet, and you don't listen to anybody else.
Of course, we're listening
to you, sir. Who put the nanothermite in the dust?
Respectfully, if you are going to oblige by our request to not ask him questions right now, we're going to have to ask you to leave.
Well, too bad he was
involved. I'm sorry.
Actually, I don't know these people, and I actually came to give you the nanothermite report.
Okay.
I was hoping you'd take a look at it.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to just ask you really quickly about Zollicow.
I just want to ask him one question.
I understand that in...
Have you read my book?
I haven't.
Okay.
Well, but I just wanted to hear you speak so I could decide if I wanted to buy the book or not. Okay. You know, $20 is a lot right now for the working people. And
you know what we have in this country?
What do we have?
Libraries.
That's a good idea. But just really quickly, Zollicow's commission, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, he gave everybody on the commission the right to veto anything that goes in the report, so that if you have a body...
It wasn't Phil Zollicow's commission. He was our executive.
But he pretty much called the shots, right?
He
created...
Sir, I've already asked you to please stop asking questions.
Okay.
Well, can
thank
I ask
you very much.
I was clarifying his statement.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying it.
I was just
I know you guys have an open mind about this.
I do.
I hope you do, too.
The more you find out, the more we'll all find out. I respect your right, your First Amendment rights.
Thank you.
But when you impinge on other people's rights... Then
well,
I don't think
I'm trying not to be intrusive, sir.
Okay.
I know that the NIST report was not peer reviewed. It was published, but it wasn't peer reviewed. And we have had 700 architects and engineers take a look at that. Do you guys know about architects and engineers?
Yeah, actually, I have their pamphlet right
here. Oh, yeah, right here.
Over 700 architects and engineers represented by this group here.
All the evidence. Are you an architect?
No, but
I've
seen Building 7 come
neither
down, and it doesn't take it.
Clear, just looking at it, that it was the United States government that
No, 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 we don't know who did it.
Right.
We don't know who did it.
But as soon as
we just want to know who did it.
We're going to understand all of the conspiracies, right?
Well, as a Jewish man, I have one question I need to ask you, sir. In the commission, you all looked at evidence about Mossad agents who were celebrating in New Jersey, Mr. Benvenista.
He's leaving. He's not going to answer any more questions.
I understand that you feel like you need to protect them, but...
No, it's not. This is not public space. This is a private space. I'm trying really hard not to throw you out.
Okay.
You're about that close. I'm going to call the cops. Please don't make me do that.
You don't need to call the cops. If you feel like you need to,
we
understand.
Go that way and turn around and go.
Thank you for taking that report, sir. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so he stopped his book signing early because he didn't like the questions, and he got the limousine just pulled up to come take him away.
Have a nice day!
People are waking up everywhere.
That was We Are Change LA confronting 9/11 Commissioner Richard Benveniste. Due to the fact that the well-connected Southern Poverty Law Center and now the Los Angeles Police Department are attacking the We Are Change groups with false accusations, that says to me that what We Are Change is doing is having an impact. And maybe we can all learn something from them. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.